Hello, this is Kevin Forty, your host for Just Thinking. I'm also the chief marketing officer for NeuroPoints. Speaking of NeuroPoints, my guest today is my colleague, CEO and co-founder of NeuroPoints, Jared McClure. But today we're going to be talking about AI more specifically. So Jared, tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe your background in AI as well.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. It's good to be with you here today. I got started in technology several years ago, and as a business developer, had that opportunity to associate AI as kind of part of what our offerings have been in our platforms. And so it's really exciting to kind of take the next step. Right now, I'm the CEO of NeuroPoints, and NeuroPoints is a cognitive-driven code that allows human thought to be put into digital space. That's very exciting. It's been developed by Dr. David Hyerly on the code side, and then we've been able to come in with the technology and develop that platform. So all speed ahead in the AI direction.
I'm so excited about it, Jared. And so Jared, right now organizations are racing to adopt AI. You know, I work largely in the education space, and one of my good friends who I just was speaking to was sharing some of the challenges that leaders of those organizations are having to keep up with the direction in which to go with AI with regards to the cost and having a clear vision to determine how to move forward. And because there's a lot of uncertainty, many of them are feeling stalled. So from your perspective, what's the most practical, cost-effective way to leverage AI today? And how can leaders ensure that those tools are implemented strategically to create a meaningful and a lasting impact?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think if we could, Kevin, I'd like to kind of back up just one step before this and maybe provide a little bit of understanding as to where the AI movement has been, because I think it will speak why so many people in your question there are struggling and not sure where to go. The AI movement in general, I think, has been really heavily focused on trying to replace humanity. And there's a lot of concern that's out there and the role of what humans are going to have in the future. And it's somewhat being touted as this desirable utopia, if you will, where humans don't have to do anything and robots will be all around us serving us. And while that might sound good in theory, for me, I think that a world without purpose, where robots have kind of transcended the need for humans, is a rather bleak proposition. So I believe that the future of AI is bright, having said that, simply because when our team got started with AI about 15 years ago, we took the less popular direction of kind of starting with a premise that human intelligence was really the driver of artificial intelligence. And so while everyone was really focusing on trying to achieve this artificial general intelligence, something that would supplant humanity and kind of be the all-knowing digital god, if you will, we approached this from the premise that because AI sprang from human intelligence, it would always somewhat be reliant on human intelligence in order to continue to develop. And interestingly, as time has gone on here, we suddenly see some of these leading AI CEOs that are coming out, and they're kind of taking a step back from their original claims that AGI or artificial general intelligence is now going to be just right around the corner. They've hit a plateau, Kevin, in that everything on the internet has been processed already. It's all of what we call the corpus of information for AI. And again, if we kind of come back to this premise that everything that AI has to utilize has actually been created by humans, then we understand why there's a plateau and why AI suddenly can't develop. I think that's a great opportunity and kind of segue into where your question got started with. Where do we go from this? You know, what are some practical, effective ways to get started with AI, and what does that look like for the future? I believe it illustrates the jumping off point for why critical thinking is so important with AI moving forward. Because what it really demonstrates is that instead of AI coming in and supplanting humanity, humanity is going to be required as the consistent driver for the future benefit of AI. And that by itself, I think, should be very, very exciting to a lot of people, because now it means that instead of fearing for their jobs, they can view AI, if you will, almost like a suit of armor, something that's going to come on almost like an Iron Man suit, if you will. Some take your abilities, and it's going to to really magnify them and augment what you can already do. And so that is to say, it should really be something that we should consider to be augmentative and instead of concern for being replaced. And so when you ask what can leaders do with that mindset, I think they should be looking to leverage things where AI is really good. AI is a master pattern finder. It's really good at task automation. And so interestingly, when you think about automating a task, you would need to think through and determine what steps are that need to be repeated. But if you look for those things over and over again, you may say, hey, this would be a great usage for AI is to be able to come in and just automate simple tasks. That's at the very, very bottom rung of what AI can do. Somebody would say, hey, that's machine learning. That's not AI. You're woefully underutilizing AI when you suggest to come in for task automation. But at its very base level, that's where I would suggest that you get started. Data analysis, insights to be generated, because, again, that concept that AI is a master pattern finder, if you will just unleash AI on your data, whatever that might be, it will spit out potential correlations. And again, here we're back to the human element. Just because it finds a potential correlation doesn't mean that it's an actual correlation or an actual causation. That's where the human mind needs to come in and kind of provide some of that input.
So as you're talking about the patterns, obviously you mentioned NeuroPoints, which are these cognitive patterns, visual color-coded patterns. How does grounding AI in a cognitive framework more tightly bridge this gap between human intelligence and artificial intelligence?
Well, Kevin, philosophically, I think it first frames how important thinking will be in the future as a skill set. And we've always suggested, especially in education, that critical thinking is really important. But what if the ability for you to be successful in a career was actually dependent upon that? Would it change the way that you think about critical thinking? And while it might sound a little bit hyperbolic, I believe the AI will ultimately divide the world into two camps. Those that can think and those that can contribute versus those that will actually be subject to the thinking of others. They're not going to have any other option. If they can't contribute to this system, which AI will be, as we already see, it's already in everything. And so as we continue to see that magnified kind of that mindset, you're either going to contribute to it or you're just going to get run over by it. So interestingly, here's another thing I guess I'll point out to you, Kevin, with respect to that if you consider since the dawn of time, maybe not the dawn of time, the dawn of computer time, rather, that the only way to input human thinking into digital space has been linear. It's the keyboard. And even though we have text-to-speech now, that is simply a derivative of the keyboard as well. We've never had the ability to really suggest that thinking is anything other than linear when it comes to the computer. That's all AI knows. So for me, it's actually really exciting with NeuroPoints to suggest that there is a new approach, a completely different approach, a non-linear approach, something that digital space has never seen before, to take human thought and actually build something on top of it. I think that's really what the promise of NeuroPoints provides, is this real connection between human thinking and the ability to move it into digital space, which is something we've never seen before. I think so. I think it'll not only make things faster, I think that practically speaking, cognitive frameworks will give us the ability to explore things that we've never seen before, because we'll actually be able to compare true thought processes side by side in a way that hasn't been done before, other than just kind of the output. You know, you think about linear thinking and you come to a conclusion and then we kind of share the conclusions. But what if you could actually kind of go point by point through the thought process of even somebody who's competing against you and actually provide that as information? It sure would provide an informed direction that we've never seen before.
Well, you made such a profound statement of the thinkers versus those that are not, haves versus the have-nots. As we look into the future with AI available to us. And so I'm thinking about students. So again, I've put my educator hat on here for a moment. Think about what is our responsibility as educators to equip the students, the learners, to be those thinkers that they're going to need to be able to thrive in the world that they'll be living and working in going forward. So do you want to expand on that a little bit?
I think it just really puts a point on the fact that schooling is not for nothing, that there is a purpose, and that the ultimate purpose really should be to help somebody learn how to learn how to think, learn how to think about their thinking. Those skill sets are more important really than any topic individually, because collectively those skills will allow them to navigate all of those subjects in a much more profound way.
I couldn't agree more. You know, it's funny because through the years there's been such an emphasis on developing literacy skills. And I'm not saying that literacy is unimportant, but literacy is another one of those things that's been addressed in a very linear fashion. Even reading itself, the brain has to be trained to read it because we're looking at linear words on a page and so forth. And so it's not the way the brain works. So we have to train it to be able to engage in the process of reading and then making meaning out of this these linear symbols and so forth. So I've always maintained that undergirding all of that is thinking. I think also of our English learners, students for whom English is not their first language and who have tremendous cognitive capabilities. But if they don't have the language to demonstrate it, sometimes the assumption is made that, well, they don't know it or they don't have this understanding, when in fact they do, but we're not looking at it from a cognitive standpoint. We're looking at it strictly from a literacy standpoint.
To that point, Kevin, I think that what you also see is just the difference between nonfiction and fiction. You know, why is it that more children especially want to read fiction than nonfiction? Because they can visualize that story in their head, where nonfiction moves into concepts that are less visual, less exciting in the storyline, if you will.
So with this idea of NeuroPoints, one of the things that I know you and the team have been working on is putting together an app where a learner could digitally create or code their thinking using NeuroPoints. Would you speak a little bit more to that?
Well, the platform is really intended to do exactly as you say, Kevin. It's intended to allow thought processes to be placed into digital space. Interestingly, and Dr. David Hierley really points this out and emphasizes this, there are only five processes that the human brain utilizes to create meaning and information in the world. And you take a step back and you go, wait, only five? Yeah, there's really only five processes that, regardless of the language that we speak or the culture that we come from, there's only five processes. And because of that, we can actually build a code to demonstrate what human thought looks like. And grabbing upon that idea, that concept, has really allowed us to come at it from a computer science standpoint and to suggest, well, if there's a language that is universal, that would be like unto a computer language, a computer code, and we could do something with that. It's always been interesting to kind of jump into the world of development here for a second. You can have a room full of developers and you can give them all the same computer language, and then you can give them a problem to solve and they will all provide code that is very different. Now, there are some similarities there, but they all approach that problem differently. They speak to it in the writing of their code, if you will, in a different way. And that's really also what we've seen with NeuroPoints. Those that actually jump in, learn the simple language of NeuroPoints, the five patterns, are also providing new approaches to the same problem. In fact, Kevin, you may recall where you and I and David got together. We were working a problem and we each came up with three different, totally different solutions to a problem where we had started at it from a different place. And it's not that either one or any of those solutions was better than the other than it might have been by opinion saying, well, hey, maybe we got here faster. Not necessarily. Look at the exploration that we went through and you missed this and this. And so was it really faster just because you arrived here? Was getting to the conclusion that was the most important, or was it the journey of everything that you thought about along the way that actually enriched the process by which you got there?
Yes, we were coding with a group yesterday. We were conducting a virtual training in NeuroPoints, and the trainer started with character points. So identifying the characteristics of a special event, a great way of spending a day. If you had a day just to do whatever you wanted, what would you do? And so she started with the purple, and doing the character points and so forth. And the one of the participants said, I know, but that was a little difficult for me because until I really understood what the day looked like, I had to do change points. I had to put it in order first. Then I could start thinking about some of the characteristics of a certain aspect of that day, but I couldn't even go there first. So it speaks to what you just said, that same topic, same idea that we were, you know, visually coding, but the approach and the starting point is going to be different depending on your experiential background, your particular viewpoint, all the what you're most comfortable with, where your thinking kind of starts naturally.
Yeah, and take that into the classroom, if you will. You know, consider how many times we might give to students and say, hey, this is where you're starting. And some of them are a little lost because that's not where it's comfortable for them to start. What if they could start wherever they felt comfortable starting? Not that it's wrong. It's just a different place to start. It all still leads towards the same outcome.
Absolutely. Yes. And providing that opportunity for students to demonstrate their own agency and choice. You know, we talk a lot about how engagement or lack thereof is a challenge that so many educators are struggling with. And I believe that a part of that is linked to motivation. And I'm not motivated if I don't have a sense of choice, if I don't get to exercise agency. That's true in the workplace, in the classroom. It's across the board. So I love that this structure allows for that flexibility that will feed that sense of choice and agency as a learner, as a thinker.
Yeah, absolutely.
So why do you believe that, I think we already talked about this some, but enhancing thinking skills and a more intentional cost and time efficient use of AI will be essential to organization success in today's marketplace, both the public and the private sector, and even more so in the world ahead?
I come from the business world, so I suppose that old phrase, time is money, is the first thing that comes to my mind, which really drives at the heart as to why organization is such a focus in the business world. But I think beyond the benefit of the monetary gain, Kevin, are the outcomes that we'll see as people expand their natural abilities by augmenting their talents with AI. And what we consider might be incredible now will become remarkable as we really learn to embrace AI from the standpoint of human intelligence. I mean, look at the way that the internet is structured for just a moment. We have had a tool that allows us to collectively upload our problems, our solutions, our thoughts into a centralized place. And we've all had access to that for a long time. But what AI provides is a different approach kind of to that same collective resource of information, if you will. It because it can start with an understanding of who we are and our ability to understand. You know what? In fact, let me put a point on this by jumping back for a second to a series that I watched on YouTube, and it was a professor explaining quantum mechanics in five different ways. And it started with here's explaining to a child, and then maybe to a teen, and to a college student, and then you know a professor, and then maybe an expert that's in the field or something like that, right? And you might ask yourself, why did they actually go through? Like, what was the benefit of doing that? And of course, the clear answer is, well, because not everybody is at the same place in their level of understanding. And that right there, I think, is what AI provides for us beyond what just the internet does. AI can understand where we are at in our own personal development just by kind of grabbing our own profile, information that we provide to it. And it can also pull information from resources that are similar. You know, I don't necessarily want a second grade answer to a college level question if that's what's being supplied to me, and vice versa. And the ability to not have to kind of sift through that information on my own on the internet, but to actually have a digital assistant in AI, if you will, that understands what I'm looking for and can speak to me at that level. And if for some reason I still have an additional question, I can explore that further and suggest what I don't understand that needs to be filled in, and those gaps can be filled in quickly. So it's still the collective mind, if you will, of the world, because that's where all the information is coming from, just brought down to an individualized level. I think that's really the promise of what AI provides, especially in our schools. If we look to apply that properly, that is what it will do. It will help people at the level that they're at with an individualized and personal experience, and not necessarily give them answers. I think that's probably what people are fearing the most, is that AI will just come in and just give them answers. That's why the emphasis on thinking is so important. It's actually more of a symbiotic relationship, if you will, between us and AI, where we are continually feeding it new information so that AI as a resource continue to grow, but then we in turn also are continually benefited by those that are uploading their experience into AI so that we can receive it at the level for our own personal progression.
I love you speaking of it as a symbiotic relationship. And I found myself in my current role that it is such an incredible thought partner for me, because, you know, I'm working in an office by myself. Yeah, I could get on a call, or I can, you know, Zoom somebody or whatever. But a lot of times I'm sitting there at a desk in front of a computer and having to generate thoughts and ideas and put together some type of communication. And it's been such a blessing to have this tool at my fingertips to be able to, you know, provide a different perspective, a different way of looking at things, differentiating my communication depending on how I frame the audience and so forth. I don't know that I could survive without it now. It is such an essential tool for me going forward. But you touched on something else, because you started talking about this from a business perspective, as you talked about, you know, explaining something to someone at this level versus this level. And I know in the workforce, you might have people at the beginning level of some particular role and some that are more advanced, some that are expert. So you've got to differentiate the way you present the information. Same thing in a classroom. And the number one area that was shared by some former colleagues with me in this state, living here in Texas, when they're looking at the teacher evaluation instrument, differentiating instruction, that's the number one area of challenge. And if they could be equipped with the tool that would help to facilitate that individualization, that personalization, think what a game changer that could be.
Yeah, it really puts a point on cognitive models and the approach that we've taken specifically, Kevin, because as you know, you call AI such a blessing, it's also a pernicious curse that most people don't understand when they're utilizing AI. And that is that current AI in the way that it's presently constituted with a lot of these leading providers becomes an echo chamber. It is the algorithms themselves are intended to come back to you and to reinforce what it thinks that you want. It's what I call a guess what's in my head machine. I can, for example, tell it in a business setting that a man in a banana suit is the best form of advertising and marketing that a company could ever have. And it will actually come back and reinforce that thought to me down the road if I, you know, what are some great ways to go and market a company? And so that's really the danger of what AI presents to us currently. And I think that's why it is so important that we kind of look beyond just some of these large language model approaches, which is really what all leading AI is right now. We really need to move into cognitive models, which allow us to compare actual thought processes side by side, things that really do understand and are predicated upon the way that we are thinking. And I think it's also important. Here's another thing. AI will never disagree with you. It will never come back and tell you, no, that's not right. You're thinking about that the wrong way. It doesn't really provide such strong, we'll say, kind of a powerful debate-like position, if you will, to really challenge your ideas. It will just kind of softly come in and maybe suggest, here are some different approaches, and doesn't necessarily give one versus the other. And that's intentional so that it's not including bias, but I think it's actually a bug, really, is kind of how I would define that in what AI is currently, because it's taking away our opportunity to really have some strong opinions from opposing sides of a particular topic or conversation be presented to us, and then allow us the opportunity to explore those and come to our own conclusions. Kind of circling back to where you started with this, our own agency and our ability to choose for ourselves, I think that's promise of the future of cognitive models in AI really represents. And to put a point on that again for NeuroPoints, I think NeuroPoints will be such a huge game changer because it will really require all of AI to kind of be built from the ground up again within these frames of context. And your frame may be very, very different than mine, as I expect that it would be, as it would be from many other people that would come in. Now, imagine if you have all of those frames that are coming in, and we're kind of pulling out those things that are similar and those things that are different, and we're really putting an emphasis on those when we're presenting it to you. Hey, some people this way, some people think this way. Which way do you think? And you get to arrive at that conclusion based on your own conscience.
As I'm hearing you speak about NeuroPoints and the cognitive framework and what that's bringing to AI, I'm just thinking about your connection with Dr. David Hirely and what that brought to the work that you were part of for, you know, nearly two decades. I know that Dr. Hirely's been engaged in this work for over 40 years. You know, for some people, this will be the first time they're hearing his name. They don't know about his work, but I'd like for you to take just a moment to talk about the man, Dr. David Hirely, and his work and the impact that that's had on the work that you're doing, that we're doing moving forward.
I think David really represents both the past and the future. And I think that's an important piece in consideration of where we're at right now, because one of the things that really drew me to his work is that it already has a proven track record. His work with thinking maps has been used globally for over 20 years now, and has facilitated the learning of millions of students and professionals even across the globe. So just looking at that and saying, okay, here's somebody who's already very well versed in some of these processes by themselves, but when he presented this new model that originally he had called thinking points, and he presented those to us, and we explored and we saw that, it really exposed to us a great excitement because it looked like a neural network. It was exactly what we had been considering in our own cognitive models and the development of AI, but it gave a solid universal platform and approach to that. We had kind of been dancing around some of these thought processes, and it really hadn't even come to our mind that, hey, we could actually put this into a single code, a universal code. And so David, in a lot of ways, provided that missing link, that missing piece that we'd had, and it married these two together and just opened up a world of possibilities. And so, again, kind of knowing that he has such a strong track record in the past of having built these models for people that can think, and to see them work in multiple applications gave us great confidence to also further explore what he was doing. And then to actually see it work now in digital space is really, really exciting.
Amen to all that. And so the next piece of this is, you know, NeuroPoints, we talk about connecting the dots, if you will. You're also working on this from a structural standpoint, sort of bigger picture, with that central brain and the nodes. And can you speak just a little bit to that piece and the work that you're doing with NeuroPoints, but then also with some of your work with some of your other endeavors as well to connect all of those dots?
Yeah, I think it's important that we try to bring AI to almost the form of a public utility, kind of similar to the internet, something that everybody has access to. That's kind of one of our main aims and goals, is to allow AI to be accessible to as many people as possible, because that really reinforces the idea that humanity and human intelligence, more specifically, is what is going to power the future of AI. And if we can facilitate that by putting kind of the basics of the AI into the hands of more people, then what it means is that we will be able to build out a future faster and with more inputs into that system. So that's kind of our general approach, our mission, if you will, is get AI, a generalized AI, into the hands of as many people in such a way that they feel comfortable interacting with that. At NeuroPoints is the platform that you don't need to know anything about coding or development technology or anything else like that. If you could just understand the patterns that Dr. Hirely has put together, you could participate in building out the future of AI and making it so simple so that even a kindergartner can come in and learn these patterns and draw them out and supply human intelligence into the system, I think that's just revolutionary in terms of what it represents for the future.
Yeah. It really is. And I'm already hearing stories just like that from people that have just recently been introduced themselves and are introducing it to their grandkids or kids in the classroom and so forth. And the immediacy with which students are taking to NeuroPoints and these patterns is so much quicker than I think any of us anticipated. So that's incredibly exciting. Well, we're coming to the close of our time together. And out of respect for our viewers and our listeners, we try to keep this around 30 minutes. So, Jared, is there anything else about what you're just thinking that I did not give you the opportunity to address in this episode? Last word.
Well, Kevin, I think let's just circle back to where you started with that. There's a bit of a paralysis with where to go next with AI. It's all the buzz and people aren't quite sure where to get started. But I'd like to just encourage everyone to start with some of those simple tasks that you want to automate. Get comfortable with thought processes and make things happen by jumping in and learning the language of NeuroPoints. Because as you do that, you'll be able to buckle up and get ready for the future. The future will move ahead at the speed of thought.
Love it. Jared, thanks for being part of Just Thinking.
Thank you, Kevin. It's good to be here with you.